The Department of Veterans Affairs has special power now to get rid of senior executives who engage in misconduct. Congressional overseers want to extend that power to cover other employees at the agency. Stuart Liff is a fellow at the Performance Institute. He's writing about getting rid of poor performers in government. And he says federal managers have more power to fire people than they might think.
You don't have to change the law. You don't have to change the rules. What you have to do is apply the principles within the law, and you'll be able to deal with poor performers and poor employees, but we don't do a good job in government of doing that.
You have five reasons that you explore as to why it's difficult. The first one is the probationary period, and you're right, the one-year probationary period for new employees is intended to be the final step of the selection process, but that winds up being almost a cementing process. If you make it through that, it seems to be a confirmation of your status. Is that a fair read on my part?
It is. The probationary period is considered to be the last step of the selection process. But far too often, once people get in there, even though the signs are there very quickly, no action is taken. And once that happens, then someone becomes part of the system and has all the rights everyone else has. And while it's still certainly not impossible to fire them, it's more difficult to fire someone who's past probation than during probation.
And you write the problem is not so much the system as the application of it. And that takes us back to where this discussion always seems to go, which is the manager's discretion and willingness to put in the time and effort and work that's necessary to do it. Is that a fair read?
I think that is a fair read, but I also think it's important to recognize that you have a couple of hundred years of history, and people have learned the wrong lessons from history, and the conclusion they've learned is it's easier to move someone around than to try and deal with them, and that's exactly why you have the problem today, because of the culture that's evolved over a couple of hundred years.
The second point that you write about is the standard of proof, and you write an adverse action under 5 U.S.C. Chapter 75 requires managers to prove their case by a preponderance of the evidence, and that means 51% of the evidence has to indicate this is somebody that's worth getting rid of. Am I on the right track?
You're on the right track for conduct cases. For performance-based cases, all you have to prove your case by is substantial evidence, which is an even lower standard. Yet, based on MSPB's survey, many people seem to think that the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a much tougher standard and one that typically applies just to criminal cases. And that's certainly a misunderstanding of the system.
So when I think of that concept, I think of understanding that the evidence as presented, nobody looking at it, no fair-minded person would think this was an employee that we should retain. And so that explains, I think, a lot of what the problem is with managers who think if that's the standard they think they have to prove a case to, then I can see why they'd be apprehensive to do so. It would seem more like sticking your neck out in case not everybody that was judging the case agreed with you.
Well, that's true. If you believe that's the standard, you're going to be much less likely to go forward on a removal action than if you understood the system and understood that the standard is only 51% or lower, depending upon if it's performance or conduct. So that goes to be the heart of training, that we have not done a good enough job of training our supervisors so they at least have a basic understanding of the system and can ask the right questions.
You write, the third point is the length of the removal process, Stuart, and you write, employee must be given 30 days notice in most cases from the date of removal. MSPB found that almost one-fifth of removal actions took over 6 months. Only 23%, less than a quarter, happened in 35 days or less. What do you think accounts for that discrepancy in the extremely long period of time between when an employee gets notice and when they're actually out?
I think to a large extent that deals with the bureaucracy in some agencies. I know some agencies you have to run any removal decision past a series of different components in the agency. It could be HR, it could be your attorneys, it could be multiple levels. The more levels you have to run these decisions by, the longer it's going to take. And the longer it takes for an action to be accomplished, the less effective it is, because people are going to see if this person is such a bad employee, why is it taking you two, three, four, five, 6 months or longer to fire the person.
Stuart Liff of the Performance Institute writing about why federal managers fail to fire their low performers. And that's the most frustrating part of this process for the good performing employees, because they look at how much time and effort and energy goes into managers trying to remove bad employees and think in many cases, well, I'm doing the right thing and nobody ever pays any attention to me.
Absolutely. It frustrates the heck out of people when they're working their tail off and they see the person next to them skating by, nothing really happening. The person's probably getting paid the same as them, getting a bonus such as they are, et cetera, et cetera. So McKinsey did a study a while back, said that a bad employee has five times the adverse impact on an organization than a good employee has. And that to me wraps it up in a nutshell.
You write the fourth point, the period to reply to a proposed removal is another obstacle. You write, employees are entitled to a minimum of 7 days to reply to a proposed removal, but it doesn't always work out that way, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's something that MSPB identified as one that I'm not overly concerned about. Many union contracts require that you give something longer than 7 days, could be 14 days or what have you. So if it takes an extra week in the process, I don't think that has a tremendous impact overall. But if you're looking at how long it takes government to fire someone, the extra time simply demonstrates that it takes longer in most cases than 30 days to fire someone.
And you point out that that's an issue that's completely within the control of management. You write, in many cases, it builds goodwill with unions when agency officials are willing to be somewhat flexible. Is there an ideal number there, do you think? Is it? Should it stay 7? Should it be 15? Should it be something else? Or is that something that is useful to keep flexible and on a case-by-case basis, do you think?
I mean, I think every case is different. Some cases are going to be much more complex than others. But I think the vast majority of cases shouldn't take more than 1 to 2 weeks. If there's an occasional really unusual case, I don't see why management shouldn't grant a little bit more time. But if you start getting to a month or two or three, then that's a completely different story. I think the principle of reasonableness applies here, and most cases, I think 1 to 2 weeks is more than fair.
And we're referring to the time that an employee would have to respond to a proposed removal. The fifth point, Stuart, that you write about is perceptions regarding employee rights. And you write, mid-level managers have to deal with problem employees on a day-to-day basis, might disagree with the statement of the Merit Systems Protection Board that the level of rights given to the individuals that are removed aren't strongly objected to. What's the objection that you see from the managers that would have to deal with these people on an ongoing basis?
The objection is simply this. People who feel their jobs are in jeopardy, or people who know they're poor employees, often use their protections as a way to grind management down. They'll file multiple grievances, EEO complaints, and other issues as a way of making things so difficult for management to take action that they try and pressure them to, quite frankly, give up. And it's the way people use the system and management's lack of a strong response to that that can often create problems. I'm not saying management should respond negatively to someone using the system. That's their right. But in the same way that employees use the system, in many cases in a sophisticated way to promote their perspective, managers should understand the system as well and use it to their advantage when they're moving forward. But if you're the typical supervisor who's just been hit day after day, month after month by multiple complaints, grievances, etc., and you're not getting the support you need from your HR department, your attorney, senior leadership, that can be very frustrating. And I think that's one of the biggest problems is that people use the system to grind management down and management doesn't respond appropriately.